Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Varsha.
And I'm Devin. I almost tried to say my name while you were saying yours. That's embarrassing. So, Varsha, we are here with a little, like, episode lit. You know, like a little nug here.
I don't actually know why we're here. Nothing big has happened, has it?
No, nothing. It's been a super slow news week. Fuck me. Seriously. This is bananas.
So weird and so fast. It's like I'm getting whiplash, though. It's like I'm in a car, right?
I know.
And no, you know the first Harry Potter book when you're at the you know the bank, the Gringotts Bank, and you're in that cart.
Oh, the cart, and you're like flying all over. In case you know we have any new listeners, this is part political podcast, part Harry Potter fan podcast. If you're like, where's all this Harry Potter shit coming from?
Yeah, and also this is part personal life podcast. It's as if the universe knew that I was really single and needed to give me something else to focus on.
Oh my God,
I know. And it did. I'm so happy right now.
I know. I think the best part about doing this podcast was meeting you, Varsha, and so now you'll just call me on a Saturday night and be like, this asshole. And it's the best part of my week.
I will talk more about it later after we get through the big news. So yes. What is the big news, Devin?
Okay, so Nancy Pelosi announced that she is starting an impeachment inquiry, which at this point, it almost, because impeachment inquiry as like a concept has been thrown around for like the last couple of months. Jerry Nadler, who's the head of the Judiciary Committee? No.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah. Judiciary. Whew. Look at me, no thanks. You know, he's, for the last couple of months, has been like, fuck all y'all. I'm doing an impeachment inquiry. You know, basically go fuck yourselves. I'm doing it. But it's been, you know, but Pelosi's really the only one who can make that an official, you know, mandate. And she's been really reluctant to do so. And she's gotten a lot of heat for it. For not, including from us, like, you know, we're part Harry Potter fan podcast and like part Nancy Pelosi stan podcast, but she's been really irritating. And, you know, and I think, and I like to think that this is her vindication a little bit.
Me too. I know it's like, I know people might get annoyed by this, but basically there are two reasons why Pelosi could have waited so long. The first reason, and it's always both. The first reason could just be she was afraid, right? She's basically afraid that not enough Democrats would support it. And if she did support it so early on, a bunch of Democrats that won in Trump districts would lose in 2020, right?
Which was a
bad
point.
Political strategy.
Because let's remember that, you know, as the leader of the Democratic Party in the House, a big part of her job is keeping control of the House and taking fire for her more moderate members. And
that's actually her whole job.
Yeah, that's really
like
her whole job.
When a Republican is president, the Democratic speaker, their whole job is just to make sure they get to make sure that there's still 218 Democrats when the next election rolls around, right?
Exactly.
Because she doesn't get to pass anything. Anything that gets passed to the Senate doesn't pass. So fundamentally, her job was just to make sure Democrats stayed elected. But the thing is, her other job, which is the job of any congressperson, is to make sure that the other branches of government are kept in check. That is the fundamental basis of our democracy, is that we have checks and balances. And since day one of this presidency, Donald Trump has been committing high crimes and misdemeanors, okay? You can have emoluments, you can have Stormy Daniels paying her off, you can have the Russia investigation, and now you can have this Ukraine thing, right? There's so many things he's been doing wrong. Also, the fact is, I don't know if people know this, but one of the articles of impeachment against Andrew Johnson, the most racist president alive, was basically, I'm going to read from the article itself because it's fascinating. It's the article is basically he did attempt to bring into disgrace, ridicule, hatred, contempt, and reproach the Congress of the United States and several branches thereof, and to impair and destroy and regard the respect of all the good people of the United States. Basically, this article is basically detailing how racist Andrew Johnson was and how horrible he was at speaking and protecting the government's integrity.
Long story short, he got part of him being impeached was because he was a big old dick.
Exactly.
So,
and on that even alone, Johnson, even though no president has ever been convicted after being impeached, there have been two presidents, Johnson and Clinton, who were impeached. Nixon was basically almost impeached, but resigned before it happened because it was certain he was going to be impeached and convicted, right? So that's why I think a lot of Democrats, specifically Nancy Pelosi, were afraid. They're like, okay, look at what happened to Clinton. You know, Clinton, he didn't get impeached. He got acquitted in the Senate. And what I have to say to that, it's not like President Gore won in 2000.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So there are so many reasons to impeach the president. And the fundamental reason is that he has been committing crimes since day one.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of this too. Okay. So let's pull back for a second. So what happened, Varsha, that made Nancy Pelosi change her mind? Can you give us an overview of what happened with the Ukraine? Because this is central and essential to understanding why we have a sea change.
Yeah. So basically, Donald Trump, he tells Ukraine when he's on a call with the prime minister, he tells Ukraine, hey, I'd like a favor. You know, just a teeny tiny favor. I'd like you to investigate the son of our former Vice President Joe Biden. And then he basically asked for this favor, and this transcript that they released, which is definitely redacted.
Well, and it's also not a transcript. I think this is an important point. They did not release a transcript. They released notes from the call. So this isn't just verbatim what was said. This is basically the best version of what this call was, because it's somebody taking notes. It's somebody pointing out like the highlights. We don't actually know exactly how any of this was phrased. And that is an important distinction, especially when we're talking about this kind of, I don't want to say gray area. I don't want to say unknown, but more like a kind of like nebulous, like slippery thing.
This is the Barr memo of the Ukraine scandal.
Yes, okay? Thank you.
Basically, remember when Barr released that memo about what the Mueller report actually said, and then you read the Mueller report, and I was like, Barr, you're a fucking liar.
Yeah, okay? Yeah, yeah.
That's basically what this is. So this call happens, and then there was a whistleblower complaint, and this whistleblower basically said that the complaint was involving the communications with a foreign leader and a promise that Trump made, which was so alarming that a U.S. intelligence official who works at the White House basically went to the Inspector General of the Intelligence Committee and said, hey, this was fucked up. And the Inspector General was like, yeah, this is really bad. Yeah. And this was all leaked to the Washington Post and a bunch of other news sources. And finally, it just snowballed. Into
also,
that. You know, we got more and more information.
Also, side note, the IG in this case is a Trump appointed person. So this is not somebody, you know, I feel like the next phase of the news coverage is going to be the Trump administration trying to discredit this inspector general. You know, they did it with Mueller, calling him an angry Democrat, even though he's a Republican. But they can't even do that because this was a Trump-appointed person. So, trying to impeach their credibility, to use the word, is going to, I feel, be a lot more difficult, which I think is going to be important in the next 2 weeks or so as this becomes an even bigger shit show.
Yeah, but this is actually the simplest of the Trump scandals, okay? The first thing that happens, step one, he gets on a call with Zelensky, right? The Ukrainian president. And he says, hey, can you do me a favor? And Zelensky's like, sure. Can you give me some military aid? We want to buy these weapons. And Trump is like, sure, totally. First, I want you to investigate Joe Biden for this bullshit thing.
Well, not just Joe Biden. And he wants to investigate Hunter Biden, which is Biden's son, which, again, I feel like is going to be important moving forward here because, again, this is Trump's line has always been like, my children aren't a part of this, like, don't investigate them. And, you know, completely went off the rails when people, you know, tried to look into John Jr. or Eric or Ivanka. And so this isn't just even going after a political rival. This is going after a political rival's family, which again, will reflect badly on Biden if it were to go forward. But it's not even necessarily about it's about taking down a political rival in like the most disgusting way, which, I mean, of course it's Trump. Like, he manages to go to the absolute most disgusting place here. But I do want to point that out, that it wasn't just about like, oh, investigate Biden. It was like, investigate Biden's son. And then we're going to use that.
Yeah, but specifically on this call, he basically tells the president, the Ukrainian president, to refer to William Barr, the attorney general, and Rudy Giuliani, who's a private fucking citizen. So, like, and think back to Barr's confirmation hearing. He was asked, and he couldn't answer, whether or not he would open a faulty investigation for Donald Trump if asked. And he refused to answer that question. Like, this motherfucker, Donald Trump specifically, has basically, he read a book on how to commit bribery and how to commit all these crimes and said, oh, okay, let me follow all of these lessons to a T. And then the phone call is recorded. And then somebody, complained about the phone call because they listened in. So, like, it's so obvious that this is a crime that it's not even, you know, it's not, it makes sense why Democratic support for impeachment just snowballed all the way, right? And on top of that, Giuliani, he went on TV because no one has the good sense in the White House to tell him not to go on TV. And he basically said to a bunch of different reporters, yeah, I did an investigation. It's all on my phone. The State Department actually told me to do it. So, like, there's just so many threads to this. And just today, Donald Trump tweets out, or actually he says in, I think, a press conference, he basically says, you know, listen to Mike Pence's call with the Ukrainian president. They were perfect. So he's not only like throwing, you know, he's not just throwing Rudy Giuliani and William Barr under the bus. Like, he might as well throw, he might be throwing William, Mike Pence
under
the bus.
Which, if he'd like to do that, please be my fucking guest. Throw Mike Pence under the bus with you. Like, ah, oh, how'd this bus get on top of me? Like, that works for me too. Like, don't feel like you have to pull back on that. But you're right. There are so many threads and there are so many very complex moving parts here. And that's saying a lot because, like you said, Varsha, correctly, that this is the simplest of all Trump scandals. So, and the other thing about this, and I think the other thing that the Trump White House is going to try to do is say, oh, there was no overt quid pro quo, right? The language here was not, you know, does not match that sort of definition, which, you know, we talk about splitting hairs, but Trump has been holding the aid meant for Ukraine for months. He's been holding it back for no discernible reason. And this call, again, the whole situation makes it seem like this call happened maybe recently. This call happened back in July, the day after the Mueller report came out. So this has been in works for months. So this is this isn't even like something that's happened recent, well, super recently. You know, every month feels like 10 years. So, you know, it was.
Yeah. Another reason this line of investigation for the basis of impeachment inquiry is different is because this is happening while he's president, right? Because technically, I'm pretty sure Stormy Daniels was paid off during the campaign. The investigation into like Russian interference and whether or not the Trump campaign did it, that was before Trump became president, right? And all the other shit that Donald Trump has done, the tax returns, all this kind of stuff, that is before he became president. So this is brand new because this is basically Nixon all over again. This is a crime committed during the presidency and a cover-up committed during the presidency.
It's the cover-up that fucks you up every time.
Yeah. And what's distinct like about this is like just in, like, Ukrainian officials understood that the discussion of Biden's probe was a condition for any phone call between Trump and Zelensky. Like, the quid pro quo was understood by the Ukrainian side. So it's pretty fucking obvious that Donald Trump knew what he was doing. You can't have the "I'm not smart enough to commit a crime" defense on this one, because it was pretty clear what he was doing, because this has been going on since
the other part of that too is, this is what Trump says he's best at, right? He makes deals, right? Ultimately, Trump has been telling us all along. He's been telling us all along that all of this shit is true about him. But keep in mind, his whole theory of his campaign back in 2015 and 2016 was that he is the greatest deal maker the world has ever seen. And so, you know, to him, I think, and again, I'm not trying to excuse this or you know, minimize this in any way. But I think that he was like making a deal. And that, I think, is why this feels so credible, because this plays directly into his brand. This is directly something that he said multiple times that he wants to do. He wants to make these deals. And we know from his time as a failed real estate, quote unquote, mogul, that these were the kind of deals that he made.
So on September 12th, you know, Trump administration finally agrees to let the aid go through. But then on Friday morning, like, you know, they asked whether he had talked to the Ukrainian president Biden. He said, it doesn't matter what I discussed, right? It's literally, it's not a crime if the president does it. And then the whistleblower complaint comes out in the news, right? So it's so clear that this whistleblower was like waiting until something would like make sense. And like the whistleblower, he or she filed this complaint on August 12th before the aid came through. But finally, when it came out in the media, it's clear that the inspector general like called the complaint like credible and a matter of urgent concern and wanted the congressional intelligence committees to be informed, right? So it's not as if this is something that Democrats are just throwing at the wall and seeing what sticks. It's not spaghetti. Like, this is real. And I think that's why it's so important that we take this seriously. And that's why it's so it's so good that Democrats have decided to like just jump on this. But I think what's key to remember is that if, and now that they're opening an impeachment inquiry, they have to do a few things to make sure not only that this sticks and you actually get to the number of votes you need to impeach him, and maybe make sure that at least the trial in the Senate isn't just like swept under the rug. They have to draw these hearings out for as long as possible. They have to get every single bit of information, and Congress people cannot be the ones that are questioning. It has to be actually congressional lawyers. The staff lawyers should be doing the questioning. There should be one lawyer, like make it like a Ken Starr type person and just like go for it. You know, you have to get all the information out on the table, put it all on the record, as it were, to make sure that when it gets to the Senate, there is a distinct trail of criminal activity that not even Mitch McConnell can deny. Like, Mitch McConnell and all the Republican senators can still vote against impeachment, which vote against conviction, which they probably will. But at least make the hearing as credible as possible. That is the goal of the House right now, because I think even Nancy Pelosi and probably everyone in the Judiciary Committee know that right now, as of today, as of September 25th, they don't have a case for conviction in the sense that impeachment is a political process. But it's not impossible. You know, there are still Republican senators who might be willing to throw them under the bus.
I mean, I think once some of the writing is on the wall more clearly, like you said, if they have this very complete sort of trail and this sort of complete investigation, and Republican senators, especially those who, you know, maybe have been against Trump or have said they're against Trump or at least have, you know, not jumped on the Trump bandwagon, they might see the writing on the wall, and whether or not they want to continue to support Trump, they might realize that's not really an option anymore. But I mean, that's all wishful thinking, and that's all, you know, me speculating, because, you know, why not? But I will say, another thing before, because I do want to talk about what impeachment actually is, because it's quite complicated. But first, I do want to talk a little bit about hold on. Sorry. I lost my train of thought. I want to talk about impeachment. Wait a second, senators. So I think a big part of this is, first of all, what we've been saying, at least on this show for a while, is that it's not even just about impeachment to get a conviction. It's about holding the executive branch to account and saying that this shit is not acceptable. And again, like, you could make a case, one could make a case that some of the Mueller stuff was mushy and like, oh, he wasn't president yet, and can he be impeached for, you know, X, Y, and Z that happened during the campaign? Fine. Do I agree? No. But you can make that argument. But now, like you said, there is no argument to be made against what he did. He used the auspice of the president's office to try to basically extort another country into investigating his political rival. I mean, if that's not some autocracy shit right there, I don't know what is.
Basically, yeah. It's basically like Turkey trying to get Gulen back into the country. You know, like, it's serious shit, okay? And the reason it's serious is not just because of these norms that we talk about. It's serious because he's bringing in the Attorney General to do this kind of stuff. He's supposedly bringing in people from the State Department to do this kind of stuff. He's preventing the business of the United States and the United States diplomacy to do this kind of stuff. Like, what if something, like, what if something, like, horrific happened on the Ukrainian border and they really needed this aid, right? like, this is like besides the point, but like fundamentally preventing the United States from conducting its business abroad, that itself is a high crime. That is treason, right? And so basically what's in the Constitution is bribery, treason, high crimes, and misdemeanors. And this is like all four of them. It's a quadruple whammy.
A classic quadruple whammy. No, I mean, the Trump administration has really hit impeachment bingo here, right? Yes. Like, it's kind of impressive if it weren't so terrifying. And the fact of the matter is, and I also think what really turned a lot of tides was there was an op-ed in the Washington Post by 7 freshman Congress people who all had military backgrounds, who basically wrote this op-ed that said, yeah, no, we're done. Like, who are from purple or Republican leaning states who are Democrats and won their seats in 2018. And they came out and said, look, as members, as veterans, as members of these Armed Services Committee and these other, you know, intelligence and security committees, like, we're done. This is over. And as much as my constituents might not be interested in impeachment, this is no longer about me or my constituents. This is about the country. This is about, you know, what is a bridge too far. So I think that also had a considerable sort of, I would guess that it had a considerable effect on Nancy Pelosi's calculation and has really, you know, really gave not permission, but sort of changed the culture of what impeachment was going to be just enough to make it politically viable.
Yeah. And yeah, like basically, like I understand why people from across like the spectrums of the Democratic Party have been like, oh, impeach him now. And other people have been like, let's wait. I mean, won't this like help Trump because he'll be like, Washington is against me. Like both those views are totally valid. I think what's interesting about this is that right now we're seeing like a coalescing of both those views, because fundamentally you see that, yes, there are still risks to impeaching him. But at this point, this is too much of a slam dunk, because right now you have, I think, 214 House Democrats are willing to impeach him. 214, you only need 218. And I understand that that means you're not going to get a conviction. But fundamentally, what matters is that 214 House Democrats are willing to look at the evidence and willing to go through this hearing in the Judiciary Committee and decide, okay, this amounts to a high crime or misdemeanor. This amounts to bribery. And that's basically what they're trying to do, right? Because even if he doesn't get convicted, what an impeached president says to the public, especially people who didn't vote in 2016, who might have voted Democrat, or people who are moderate, or people who are on the fence, is the House conducted a process and determined that the president likes to do crimes and did crimes. Okay. And that may not be important to like Republican schmuck who's in a diner waiting for the New York Times to interview him, but that is important to other people, because fundamentally the promise that Donald Trump made, even though it was a bullshit promise, was I'm going to drain the swamp. I'm not going to be like every other corrupt president, but he was, right? He has been when it comes to lobbying, when it comes to his trade practices internationally. Like, he's basically screwing over most of the people who voted for him on so many things, except for the racism.
Right.
And so I think, like, this really simple scandal can be distilled into something that people can understand. And I think that's what's important to understand about this, is that this scandal is like every other thing Trump has ever done. He's basically, first step, he commits a crime that looks like a deal, but really it's a crime. Second step, he tries to cover it up. Third step, he basically tries to say every single person who's investigating him or questioning him is wrong and is committing treason by being against him. So all of those three things, they're all high crimes and misdemeanors.
Right.
Like, that's the plot of this. And so when he says presidential harassment, it's literally like Crimea River. Like, Crimea River. Like, basically. I'm just saying.
Well, and okay, so on that note, the high crimes and misdemeanors, I do want to take a minute to talk about what impeachment is in kind of a conceptual sense, because it is we don't know how to do it. I mean, it's only happened twice, as you mentioned. One was in 1868, that was Johnson, and one was in the 90s, that was Bill Clinton, and neither one ended up in conviction. But twice in 200 plus years is like, it's like nothing. Right. And so we really, as a system, don't know how to deal with this. because the Constitution, this is like the only thing the Constitution specifically says. This is the only part of the Constitution that could be maybe construed as self-executing, right? Where it's like, this is impeachment. This is what it means. You know, this is the basic process, right? So they give us like a framework, which the, but it's a more detailed framework than most of the rest of the Constitution, right? Because that's the whole idea, is that it's open to interpretation, and that's where the Supreme Court comes in and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But so this is,
from what I know, like, so from what I know about what the founders are thinking when they write this, right, are at the point of 1787, when they're writing this, what they're worried about is that the president or a bunch of members of the executive branch, judicial branch, anyone who can be impeached, they are going to try to ally with foreign powers. That's what they're deeply worried about. That's what the Emoluments Clause is about. That's what all
they
these
knew
different
Trump
clauses
was
about.
I'm going to say this. They knew Trump was coming. I don't know if they expected it to take 225 or whatever years, but they knew Trump was coming.
They knew it was possible to elect a demagogue, or to elect someone whose alliances would not be to the United States, or someone who would not understand the gravity of the office of the president and who wouldn't be willing to execute it and keep their oath to the Constitution, right? They were aware of that. So that's why it has a little bit more of an outline, but it's still really, really
It's really big.
And so what it looks like, if people don't know, impeachment looks like it comes up in the Judiciary Committee in the House. They vote on it. They basically conduct a hearing where they list out the articles of impeachment, where they decide, these are all the different crimes that the president has committed. This is what we're going to investigate. This is what we're going to
And I do want to actually put I want to make two notes on that. One, this is actually where the Constitution fucks us a little, as it does so many times. Is, you know, by calling it high crimes and misdemeanors, that's not actually a legal term in terms of criminal justice, because ultimately this is not a criminal justice process. This is a political process. And so even if something isn't a quote unquote crime in the penal code, that doesn't mean it's not a high crime and misdemeanor, right? And again, it's a little spongy. It's a little squishy, and it's a little hard to define. And, you know, you'll get different camps of thought on this, right? You'll get people who say, well, high crimes and misdemeanors have to be aligned with the criminal penal code. And some people will say, no, this is a different standard for these, you know, high elected officials. You know, they are held to, if not the base level, but even higher levels. I mean, it's a little bit difficult to place that exactly in context.
I mean, if we take Bill Clinton as an example, right? He was basically impeached for perjury because he covered up the fact that he had an affair with Monica Lewinsky. He was not impeached for sexual harassment. He did not resign for sexual harassment, which, like, you know, if I were a congressperson in the 90s, I would have been asking him to do so. But he was impeached for lying about the affair and obstructing justice when it comes to the investigation. He wasn't impeached because he actually committed, he wasn't impeached for the actual crime he committed or whatever. But perjury is a sort of crime. But the thing is, perjury in daily
like Law and Order
life,
shit.
It is a crime. In like Law and Order shit, like, you can go to jail for that. You can pay a fine for that. But that's not like the biggest crime you could commit. Like, the biggest crime you could commit is, like, you know, RICO charges.
Murder.
Or, like, you know, or drug trading, like selling drugs. Like, it's not like that. So the thing is, even though the president is held technically to a higher standard, there's so many more things he could be that could be construed as high crimes and misdemeanors. That's why it's important to see this for what it is for the president, not for a daily person.
Exactly. I think that's
around,
the number one thing people don't understand about impeachment, is that we are not working off of the same framework that the judicial system works off of. This is not a criminal case. This is a political case. And it's a very weird, nuanced thing that's very difficult to understand. Even if you study this stuff, even if you know it can be a very difficult sort of construct to keep in your mind. And then the second thing is, in this process, like you said, it comes up through the Judiciary Committee, and they say, these are the high crimes and misdemeanors that we are going to be discussing and we are going to impeach you on. Pelosi is doing this slightly differently. She assigned 6 committees to basically look into and hand over the work that they've been doing. So they're not creating one mega committee. They're using these 6 existing committees and taking their work and putting it together and collating it into like a dossier, basically, which is a little bit different than it's been done in the past. But like I said, this is what I'm saying. We don't really have a clear, concise outline for this, right? Just because it was done that way for Clinton doesn't mean it can't be done this way for Trump, right? I mean, so again, this is part of what makes it so confusing is that we're not following some like hard and fast playbook here.
Because we're not following this playbook, I think it's really important as the public to keep the pressure on congresspeople. Even if your congressperson is a Republican, keep calling every single day. Every day, come up with a new crime that Donald Trump has done. There's a big list of them. You can Google for 5 seconds. You will find a giant list of all the crimes Donald Trump has done. And especially if your congressperson is a Democrat, emphasize the fact that you want articles of impeachment to include the emoluments clause. You want articles of impeachment to include the fact that he has been credibly accused of sexual assault by like over a dozen women. You want articles of impeachment to include the fact that he paid off Stormy Daniels in order to cover up his affair. And it was a campaign finance violation. You want articles of impeachment to include the Russia investigation. You want them to include the Ukraine stuff. You want it to include all of this stuff. Because every single day that a White House official or a Secret Service official is paying money to Mar-a-Lago, to live in Mar-a-Lago or to conduct business in Mar-a-Lago, that's a fucking like violation right there. Every time a foreign official stays in the Trump Hotel in the White House, that is a violation. Because what they're doing is they're creating a system of corruption. He's basically a mob boss, like a really, really ignorant mob boss, but he is. He is a mob boss with all these different rackets around town.
Would you say like
and
racketeering?
We've just got him on... Yeah, it's all, yeah, basically, right? And so we've just got him on one of these rackets, which is this one deal with this Ukrainian president, but he's done so many other things. And I think it's important for the House, especially Jerry Nadler, especially people in all of these six committees, to look at all of these things together and to make sure that you put it all together in one giant document. Because even though we can all say, yeah, Mitch McConnell's just going to throw it in the trash, it's important to make it all part of the public record, even if Mitch McConnell is going to throw it in the trash, because the Senate isn't the news today. You know, the Senate isn't the story right now. It's the House.
I think this is one of those situations where like wide scattershot is going, you have to get it all out there. Like you said, we want, you know, the House, we want to create as much of a case as we possibly can in the course of this investigation. And I also want to point out that since Nancy Pelosi announced it, Trump is officially being impeached. Like this is impeachment. Okay. We haven't gotten to the trial part. That's the thing. There are two separate parts of impeachment. The one that takes place in the House is the investigation. That is underway. Trump is being impeached. Period.
As soon as the House votes 218 to the arrest,
right.
He's
right.
Impeached.
Exactly. And conviction is what would remove him from office. So if they lay out a case in the House and 218 people vote yes on impeachment, that president is impeached, period, end of sentence. It then goes to the Senate, and then the Senate conducts the trial, which will be overseen by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, which is the dickhead Roberts. So, you know, that's another problem, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. And then that's not whether or not Trump is impeached. He's already impeached. That's whether or not they remove him from office.
Yeah. And I think the important thing to remember is that I'm a historian and I look at this historically, right? There's multiple things that can happen after Trump is impeached by the House, right? There's something that can happen that happened after Johnson, where he basically became more and more like horrible, right? And he only got acquitted by one vote. What happened after Clinton was more willing to be conciliatory, right, to Republicans after he was impeached. You know, same thing with Nixon. When the investigations began, he was horrible to a lot of Democrats. He called it a witch hunt, all this horrible stuff. But on certain things, he was willing to be conciliatory. There's basically like the president, like theoretically, could take a step back from all the criming, right, once the impeachment happened.
Stop criming,
right,
for a hot second.
But because Donald Trump is Donald Trump, he might take a step back, or what he might do is just do more crimes to cover up the crimes he's already done, right? And that's just, it's just more fuel for the fodder. And also, we have to take into the political, to take into account the political aspects of this. What he will be doing is trying to discredit this impeachment inquiry every single day on Twitter. But that, again, could have two different effects. It could help him, it could also hurt him, right? And so you have to really, what we really have to focus on is making sure that in the media, as well as in the House, what the news is every single day, that Donald Trump is lying about this. Because that has already happened today. On Fox News, they had to take Nicole Wallace, stop Trump's press conference, and actually had to say to the public on camera, she said, we hate to do this, but the president is lying.
That was on,
right? We have to have more of that.
That was on MSNBC. Nicole Wallace is on it.
Oh, sorry, MSNBC. Nicole Wallace, MSNBC. But she is a Republican, right?
She is Republican.
So, like, it's clear that it's every single person has to have a hand in this. It's not just 218 members of Congress and 67 members of the Senate and the Chief Justice. Every single person in the United States who believes that Donald Trump has committed a crime should be willing to get their hands dirty on this. And that includes people of the media, people who are campaigning for the next president, people who are just volunteering, people who are just sitting back and watching Maddow every day. You all have a part to play in this.
Right. And I also do want to point out that, and this kind of goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway, is that the people who support Trump will do mental gymnastics to continue to support him no matter what the evidence is. This is not going to change the hearts and minds of people who elected Trump because at their core they are racist. Because like you said, Trump is fucking over the majority of people who voted for him, except for the whole racism thing. So because of that, that sort of ideology, that sort of bond between Trump and his voters, because it's not economic, it's not some grand ideology, it's not abortion, you know, it's not anything that big or thoughtful. It's simply racism, sexism, and xenophobia. And that is a really, and you know, the thing is that people who are racist, who are sexist, who are xenophobic, it's an incredibly strong bond in that group, because hate is just as strong of a bonder as love. And I say this all the time. The opposite of love is not hate, it's apathy. And people who are racist, like Donald Trump is racist, it's a deep, passionate feeling. And deep, passionate feelings lead to bonding. And so that's why you see these diehard Trump supporters, no matter what he does, because the bond doesn't rest on ideology. It doesn't rest on what he's doing or not doing. It doesn't actually matter. It rests on something a little more internal, a little more, almost more intellectual in a way, right? And so I do understand that as this shit show heads forward, it's a shit show that I am very much looking forward to, but it's going to be a hot, sticky mess. But a big part of that is that this is not going to change hearts and minds. It's just not. And that is also the other part of impeachment that I think people don't really understand. And I don't mean you, I mean people like it broadly, I can't totally wrap my head around this, but you know, in terms of if you have a criminal trial, you're trying to change the hearts and minds of 12 people on the jury, right? And in impeachment, you're not trying to change the hearts and minds of anyone, right? I mean, obviously, you know, when you talk about trial and it's in the Senate and Chief Justice Roberts, and obviously it has all the sort of accoutrements, excuse my terrible French accent, of a trial, but it's never going to change what people think about Trump. But that's not the point.
Yeah. I just want to say that, like, you know, I was talking to someone about this and someone was just like, it's not going to happen. You know, when Nixon was impeached, like a bunch of people like still supported him. And like after Clinton was impeached, a ton of Democrats like supported him. And I'm like, that's true. But also, the Republicans supported Nixon until like the day before impeachment. Like, it took a long time for that base to drop. Right. So I don't think we've hit the floor on Donald Trump's support, you know, because every day there's like a new person who said they voted for Trump in like 2016 who now supports another Democratic candidate. Like, it's happening. Like, it exists. There are some people who are awake to this. And I'm not saying that they didn't make a mistake in the past. I'm not saying it's every single Trump supporter. I'm saying it's possible. Right. And I'm saying there's like two fronts that we're fighting on. And like the fundamental front that we should be fighting on as people is to support the candidates that we support, who support the policies that we believe in, right? That's like step one. That's why, you know, anytime you see a call for volunteers for the primary or for a Senate candidate or whatever, go do that. Go donate to Susan Collins' opponent. Go do that. But when it comes to impeachment, what you should be focused on is like just step one. Do you understand that the president is a crimer? Like, he commits crimes on a daily basis. Do you get
that? He's a crimer.
You do? Awesome. Have you called your representative and your senator? Even if they don't care, call them. That's all you got to do. And then if there's a protest, if there's a giant protest, if there's a giant like scream off in every single football stadium in the country for impeachment, go join that. You know, like, there are a ton of things that you could be doing. And just remember that they all fall into two different boxes. The one is making sure that we get candidates that we want in 2020 to win elections across the country, local, state, and national.
Local politics as well is sexy. As the local politics is sexy.
It is, right? We could take back Virginia's House. We could take back so many different places like Texas, Maine, Arizona, Colorado, Montana. All these places have like Senate races that we could win. So like, it's really
Georgia,
important to
Georgia, motherfuckers. There are two seats in Georgia up in 2020.
Yeah.
Both Senate seats are up in 2020 in Georgia. So like get it together, fuckers. But what I will say, and I think to your point, though, Varsha, is, first of all, I'm going to make fun of you forever that you said he was a crimer instead of a criminal. Donald Trump's a crimer. but secondly, while I think you're right, I think the base will drop out. There's always going to be, and my guess, and maybe I'll put money on this because why not? My guess is there's always going to be at least 25% of the population that support him. No matter what.
I mean, the thing is, there's still I bet if I found 25% of people who were alive during Nixon, during the Nixon impeachment, they would still say Nixon was a good president. You know, it just it happens, you know, because of that bond that you talked about. And the other thing we have to remember is that Donald Trump has something that Bill Clinton did not have. He has a whole media apparatus.
True.
That supports them to the dying day. Like Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, they are willing to spew lies and spew racist hate every single day until this is over. And so in order to combat that, the only thing that you can do is make sure that the people that you know, like you, the people you know, and the people that they know the real story. And that real story is that the president is a crimer. Okay, he committed crimes.
True.
And on top of that, he has done stuff that is inimical to your values, to someone that supports women, to someone that supports immigration, to someone that supports equality for all. He has done so many things on his policy side that you are vehemently against. And on top of that, he's decided to commit crimes in order to achieve those things, right? Because I still think the president can be impeached for creating a network of concentration camps on the border. I think that's a criminal offense.
I would definitely classify that as a high crime and misdemeanor. That's one if I ever heard one. Although, but you know what? To the point that I was making before about this bond, I was talking to a member of my family the other day, and this person is a Trump supporter, so we don't talk about politics often. But the subject of immigration came up, which is like a, you know, for me is like hold my beer, right, Willie? But and I said, you know, I'm willing to talk about, you know, immigration, like common sense immigration reform, and like I'm willing to have that larger conversation as soon as there are no babies in cages. Until then, there is no conversation to be had. That's not a thing. And this person basically, I mean, did not feel that way, right? Did not feel, you know, they said basically, well, what are they supposed to do? Like, if they can't separate children, they have to detain them together. And I'm like, no, we're talking about kids who are sitting in cages. And they just shrugged it off, because that's the level we're working at here. That's the level. People who are so loyal to this sort of hatred bond that they can look at babies in cages and say, well, what are you going to do? Right? Like, so, I mean, I think that, and I hate to put it this way, I really do, but I think we, the American people, got lucky. We got lucky on a couple fronts. One, that, well, this isn't luck, this is just Trump, but that he had the gall to try to extort Ukraine by asking for political favors against a political opponent in order to get money that was appropriated by Congress for military aid to a country, right? And then the other thing that we got very, very lucky on, and this is going to be key, is that somebody in the intelligence community also had the gall to come forward and to say something. Because whether or not this whistleblower report, I mean, I do believe it will eventually be seen and borne out. And, you know, I know that the whistleblower themselves wants to talk to Congress. There's been some reporting that their lawyer is trying to get this person to meet directly with Congress. But just by filing the report and just by putting themselves on the line like that, this came to light, which gave, you know, the moderate Democrats in the House that push to write that op-ed, to come out and say, we've gone too far. And that in turn gave Nancy Pelosi the political backing to say, okay, motherfuckers, enough's enough.
And I think that's so amazing and important. And it's like really, really inspiring to think about. Because like when any asshole tells you, oh, my vote doesn't matter, like voting doesn't matter, remember that like one person could bring right. down this whole administration. Even if Donald Trump is not convicted, one person had the courage to say, hey, I'm going to go to the inspector general on this, even though it might get back to Donald Trump or his aides or whatever, and I might get fired or I might get reassigned or whatever the hell. You know, I've decided this is a step too far. And it gave Congress members the courage to be like, okay, this guy, this person, guy, girl, whatever, was willing to take that extra step. We should too. And that should be inspiring. You know, even though it's inspiration based on the fact that the president committed a horrible crime, it is inspiring nonetheless, right? And that's basically the story of Watergate. Like, Watergate was like one FBI guy right. who was like, fuck this shit.
Yeah, this whistleblower definitely feels like a hellion.
Yeah, totally. I think they're the hellion of the week.
I just think that, again, I always knew that Trump was going to step in it at some point. I didn't know that it would actually, you know, kind of tip the scales in this way. But like I said, I think we got lucky on a couple of fronts. And one of them is that this whistleblower came forward. And I think that's important to remember. And I think as we go through this process, it's going to be very important to think about the whistleblower process and what it's going to mean in the future, because Trump is not the last person who will be elected who's this big of a crimer. Okay. Like this is going to happen again. And I think we need to really start to think and codify channels like this whistleblower program so that we don't have to rely on luck.
Yeah. And like, I just want to make one last point. I'm teaching U.S. foreign policy history this semester. And I you know, I talked to my students. I was just like, you know, what do you think this impeachment inquiry, regardless of whether or not Donald Trump gets convicted and is removed from office, what effect does this have on world politics, on geopolitics? And the thing is, it has a huge effect right now, because since 2003, and some would argue since 2001, we've been in a process where we're moving towards a more multipolar world, in the sense that the United States is not the only superpower. China and a bunch of other countries have been gaining power in international institutions. And this type of threat, in the sense, even though it's an internal threat to our leadership, even though we don't like Donald Trump, even though Donald Trump is a threat to the world order as we know it, this yeah. is going to have rippling consequences, right? And a great example of that is how it's already right. happened in Israel, right? So Netanyahu has, like, by a slim margin, been given the power to assemble a new government, but he's right. still facing corruption charges. And that is going to have huge impacts on U.S.-Israel relations. It's going to have huge impacts on Israel relations in the Middle East. And it's the same thing all over. Like, it happened with South Korea when South Korea's former president was impeached. So I think you have to think of this in a global perspective as well as a domestic perspective, and really think about this as what this could mean if Donald Trump is removed from office by election or by impeachment, what this could mean for the good of the world. We might finally enter the climate debate. You know, we might finally enter the debate on the right side when it comes to the international refugee crisis, because that's a big fucking deal. We might finally enter the debate when it comes to global inequality and all these other things that we haven't been talking about, right? Because Donald Trump is president. So we also, like, not only do you have to look at local politics because it is sexy, but we also have to keep a global perspective on this. And I know that's a lot to think about, but I think it's exciting to think about that, to think about all the possibilities that could happen either through election or through impeachment.
Well, to that point, I actually think that's a very cogent point and a very, like you said, exciting point, because people only have so much bandwidth, right? We only have so much bandwidth. I can only deal with so many issues at once. And I've been so hyper-focused on domestic issues that, like, I don't know very much about international politics. And I hope that we get to the point where, you know, domestic politics is boring enough where I'm like, all right, what's going on in China? Let's go see.
Hey, there's a fascist in India. Should we do something about that? Should we talk about that? Like, the fascists in India just visited Texas. Like, we should probably talk about that. So, like, I totally agree. I think the best part about this is that Americans who support impeachment, or at the very least are open to it, are considering, man, what could happen if we didn't have a climber in office? And that's an exciting prospect for a lot of people, not just Democrats. So I'm excited about that.
Okay, Varsha, our little episode lit has become a full episode. So that's good. But I'm excited to have these impeachment discussions in the coming months. I'm excited to talk more about 2020. I'm excited to talk about those two open Senate seats in Georgia. There's a lot going on. So Crystal, our moderator for our Facebook group, Dickwads Be Gone, which you should join if you haven't already, posted a question, and she said longtime listeners will get this joke, but what are you wearing to the impeachment? Because Sarah and I used to joke that when Trump gets impeached, we're gonna throw a huge party. Which, if Trump gets impeached, I'm throwing a huge I'm gonna rent out a venue. Every hellion is invited. We are throwing a fucking party. What?
I will join you. Yeah. I will bring my nice whiskey. Yeah. We will scotch it up all fucking night. It's gonna be lit. C-SPAN on the TV. Yeah. You know.
We know how to party over here. C-SPAN. Yeah. And like really good and expensive whiskey. It'll be great. But to me, after years of doing this show, I think I finally have to go pick out an impeachment outfit.
I'm so excited. Me too. I have my makeup all ready, though.
On point. Yeah. On point. So, Hellions, that is it for us. Varsha and I will be back soon. Varsha, thank you for coining the term crimer. I don't think my life is ever going to be the same. But, I think I will end this episode with a small prayer for Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah. The universe, or she, God, whatever, grant you the courage that you didn't have before, and the serenity or whatever the heck it is. Go for it. You got this.
Blah blah blah. You got this, girl.
You got it. Okay.
All right. Whew. So we will be back soon. In the meantime, remember to raise some hell.